Welcome to the Team Principals press conference ahead of the 2019 Mexican Grand Prix. Joining us today from left to right, we have Andreas Seidel, Toto Wolff, Christian Horner, and Otmar Szafnauer. Andreas, if we could start with you, please. We've seen some strong performances by McLaren in recent races. How comfortable are you in P4 in the Constructors' Championship, 43 points ahead of Renault?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say comfortable. It's obviously good to be in that position. It's good to see how we perform as a team, still getting better and better, still bringing more parts to the track as well for this year. But at the same time, it's not something we get carried away from. The targets we are having are a lot higher. So for me, it's a lot more important. Of course, we want to score this P4 this year, but it's a lot more important to get everything in place, let's say, in the next weeks, month, which we think is important to make the next step also.
Well, let's talk about that step, Andreas, because you've already announced, well, Mercedes power units in 2021, but also a change in design philosophy for the 2020 car. Can you explain why you're doing that, given the progress you've made this season? Can you stitch those two things together for us?
Well, first of all, regarding the Mercedes decision, I think we have communicated everything regarding that. Obviously, it was an important milestone also for myself to have clarity here as quickly as possible. So very happy to have the World Championship winning powertrain at the back of our car from 21 onwards. At the same time, this is 21, so our focus is on next year, on 2020. Reality is we're still more than a second down compared to these guys here next to me. So this means even with the regulations staying the same, we still see a lot of stuff we want to tackle with next year's car, which means we also have to do some bigger changes also in terms of car concept. James Key is working hard on that together with the entire team back home. I'm very happy with the progress that I'm seeing there. And the target is clear for next year. We want to somehow jump in between this, let's say, position in terms of lap time also where we are right now and where these guys are. And hopefully we can make that step for next year.
Okay, thank you, Andreas, and good luck this weekend. Otmar, if we could come on to you, please. It's pretty congested where you are in the constructors' table at the minute. You're currently lying P7, but only 10 points behind Renault in P5. Looking at these last four races, do you think you have the car to take P5?
Well, we hope that we do, and we've made some significant upgrades recently to the car, and we're still understanding it a little bit. So, you know, our drivers and team are up for the fight. It's not going to be easy. You know, we are 10 points behind, not 10 ahead, which makes it doubly difficult. But we'll do all we can to finish fifth if that's possible.
And a quick word on Lance Stroll, if we may. We saw a strong performance from him in Japan, out-qualifying Checo Perez for only the second time this year. Do you feel he's finally turned a corner?
Lance is very intelligent and a good racer, and he's been learning all year. So I'm not sure it's turning a corner, but he's getting better and better. And apart from the little mishap we had here, he looked pretty strong in FP1 as well. But, that came to an abrupt end at turn 16. But we've got two good drivers, and, Sergio's been with us for a long time. He knows the team. He's great on a Sunday. Lance is learning, and hopefully between the two of them, we can make up that 10-point deficit that we talked about.
Thank you, Otmar. Good luck with that. Christian, if we could come to you now, please. How confident are you coming into this weekend? Max Verstappen's won this race for the last 2 years. What chance a third?
I think you have to look at each season in isolation. And I think that, you can see at the moment, Ferrari are very much, the benchmark in terms of outright and one lap pace. And qualifying is so important here because it is pretty difficult to follow closely other cars. Obviously, Mercedes' form has been phenomenal across all types of circuit, this year. So I think, coming here, it's a bigger challenge than we faced previously. And of course, on top of that, we've got some variable weather around on Saturday and Sunday. But I think it looks pretty tight if you look at the first session, though, looking at the relative competitiveness of the car. So it looks like it could be a fantastic battle over the next couple of days.
Well, you're third and fourth in FP1. Quick word on Alex Albon, who has outscored Max Verstappen 48-31 in the five races that they've done together as teammates. His race performances have been very strong. He's now starting to maximise the car in qualifying. Can you just sum up his progress?
Yeah, I think he's doing a very good job. You have to remember this is his first season in Formula One. He's up against incredibly tough teammate, in Max. And he hasn't had the benefit of a bunch of testing or anything like that. So I think he's equipped himself and adapted, well. His feedback shows a very strong understanding of the car. And as he gains confidence and circuits that he's visiting for the first time, he's certainly impressed the whole team with his attitude, his application, and his performance so far.
Resign him for 2020?
it's still early days. I think the privileged position that we're in as Red Bull, with the ownership of two teams, is that we don't have to make any firm decision about who partners Max until the end of the year. They're all under contract to Red Bull, all of the drivers. So we'll take that time to make sure that we make all the evaluations, in readiness for next year.
While we're talking about the future, can you provide us with some clarity about the team's long-term future with Honda? What are the plans?
Well, I think it's very similar to everybody else at the moment that, there is no Concorde agreement in place. There's a lot of discussion going on behind the scenes, but there's no team with any commitment to Formula One past the end of 2020. And so I think, Honda wisely are waiting to see, how the technical regulations, the sporting regulations pan out and the commitment of the teams to the relevant Concorde agreement. So yeah, I think we're in a relatively similar position to the teams around me.
Okay, thank you, Christian. Good luck this weekend. Toto, thank you for waiting. Coming to you now. So you clinched the Constructors' Championship in Japan. Great weekend for the team. Now that you've had a few weeks to reflect, where does this Constructors' Championship rank in comparison to the other five?
Well, this year has been very different because, first of all, the loss of Niki is overshadowing everything we do. He was such an important part of the team and with us at every single race. And there's still this big void, and you could feel that when we won the championship in Japan that he was missing. On the pure sporting side, obviously we set ourselves this unbelievable objective of trying to win six double championships in a row, which was not done before. And I think achieving that is really something that we can be proud of. But having said that, we are always skeptical about our own performances. And if Ferrari wouldn't have dropped the ball in Sochi and wouldn't have dropped the ball in Suzuka at the start, it would have gone much further than Japan. And for this very reason, it's nice to have locked it in and have it between our two drivers for the Driver World Championship. But it doesn't feel as if we have been really the dominant force in those last few races. And I see the positives in that because it helps you to not get carried away with this fantastic achievement of six titles.
While we're talking about performance, your last pole position was back in Germany. Is that stat an accurate reflection of performance, or have you missed some opportunities?
No, I think it's an accurate reflection of performance, and you can see that the Ferrari on a Saturday is almost unbeatable. They're able to up their game from Friday to Saturday, and once all the power kicks in that they have available, it's very difficult to compensate for the loss of straight line. But I don't want to diminish their performance in with the rest of the chassis either. They just seem to have the strongest car on Saturday. And then when it comes to racing on Sunday, the Red Bull and the Mercedes are maybe a tiny bit more competitive at some of the races. Not the high-speed tracks that we've seen, but all the others. We seem to be crawling back a little bit.
And the Drivers' Championship is now a straight fight between your guys. Are the orders from the boss going to be a little bit different this weekend?
Well, Japan was a very complicated race for us in terms of strategies. I think what we have an obligation to do our best to give them
a car that is reliable and fast for them to fight it out on track, give them equal opportunity. And if you look at the points, the probability is probably much better on Lewis's side to win the championship. But nevertheless, we don't want to interfere in their fight and we'll do our best to stay neutral as we've always been.
Okay, thank you, Toto. Good luck this weekend. Let's open this to the floor now. And as ever, please remember to give your name and publication. First question, please.
Dan Knudsen, Auto Action and Speed Sport. Otmar, regarding the protest you filed against Renault in Japan, was that an issue you'd been looking at for a few races, or is that something that's been going at, looking at for a long time?
Well, we started looking at it after Silverstone. We ourselves had some issues with our brake bias actually failing, which resulted in Checo, I think, running into Hülkenberg at the restart after the safety car. That's when we started to look at making our system a little bit more robust. And as I'm sure everyone does, we started looking at our competitors to see what they do better than we do. And that's when we noticed that Renault had the system that we really wanted. So it started in Silverstone. We then wrote to the FIA asking if we could do the same. And the FIA wrote back saying we can't. So that's how that all came about.
Thank you. Next one, please.
Christian Nimmerfeld from motorsporttotal.com. To all four gentlemen, with the budget cap kicking in 21, is there an element of danger for sort of a spending war going on now and in 2020 for those who can afford to get a head start into 21 like happened in 2014 with the hybrid formula?
Toto, let's start with you.
The truth is that we are all within the same financial reality, and none of us has unlimited resource, unlimited financial resource behind us to just pour money into the system. It's still about efficiency. I can tell you know very well in the auto industry things are not looking easy, and nevertheless, having said that, it is clear that the big teams are being the ones that are very restricted from 2021 onwards. We need to look at our structures, change process, and maybe also the organization in a way to adapt to these new challenges, which will hit us hard in 2021, because we will be doing things differently than we are doing them today. And this is why it's clear in 2020 we have to adapt and change, and all this change is costly and will be happening in 2020. So 2020 will be a year of more financial expenditure in order to get ready for 2021.
Andreas, your perspective.
Yeah, from my point of view, I don't see this, let's say, this big risk. The big teams are still, or the top teams still will have a head start clearly for the 21 regulations, but I would say not just because of budget, because they're simply in a better shape, they're doing a better job. For the 21 regulations, the aerodynamics will still be a key performance differentiator. There's limitations in place also next year in terms of CFD and wind tunnel hours that you can do. So in the end, everyone has to decide how much hours does he want to spend on a 20 car, on a 21 car. That's the same for all. So this is how we see it. On our side, on the budget side, we have a given budget, so this will not be affected by the 21 rigs coming in 20.
Thank you. Christian.
Yeah, I think we've missed a bit of an opportunity. In fact, I raised it at the meeting last week, where if you look at it, we have the budget cap, which is, I think, in principle, pretty much agreed. It's painful for the bigger teams, and obviously will prevent the bigger teams from spending beyond that, $175 million cap. I think with hindsight, we would have been better bringing the cap in first for 21, and then taking more time to develop these regulations and evolve them and bring them in time for 22, so that any development that the big teams undertake would be under the umbrella of the cap. I think it's impossible to bring that cap forward into 2020 because you'll never achieve agreement on it. So therefore, my feeling is that you know, I think a budget cap is a, you know, ultimately a sensible thing for Formula One, but the interim period of 2020 with the current regulations that we have as teams gear up for 2021 with unrestricted spend makes it a very expensive year, and I think it will create a broader gap between the teams going into 2021 as those teams with more resource will simply spend more time in the research and development phase before the cars hit the track at the beginning of 21. So as I say, I think an opportunity has perhaps been lost to have had that process more controlled under the cap and delay these regulations and evolve them, because there's some great stuff going on for the car and the concept looks very underdeveloped at the moment. And I think if another 12 months was taken to develop that concept and bring in something that works and perhaps addresses some of the other issues like weight and so on, I think would have been a beneficial approach.
Thank you. Otmar?
Well, from our perspective, we'll be way under the cost cap this year, next year, and in future years to come. So as Christian says, if next year there is a tendency to spend more to prepare for 2021, we certainly won't be doing that because we just don't have the financial resources to do so. And that might give the bigger teams that do have those resources an advantage going into 2021. So perhaps a sensible thing to have done is, like Christian says, move the rules out such that you're faced with the umbrella of the cost cap when you're developing the new rules. So. But I don't know if that opportunity is completely gone, but if it isn't, it's a sensible thing to do, because for us, we won't be anywhere near the cost cap.
Just before we move on, Toto, your thoughts on what Christian's just suggested?
I think Christian said it very, very in a very right way. In Formula One, we are very actionistic. Things need to be done immediately. And everything is so bad and we can't continue without maybe deploying a more strategic long-term vision. There were arguments that, well, why don't we put the cost cap for, why don't we take it, implement it 1 year earlier and then start with the technical and sporting regulations in 2021. But as Christian said, I think they are not very mature. The regulations will need some more input. Around the cost cap, the single most important factor is the auditing and policing process, and none of that is in place for 2020. And obviously, if you can't police it in the right way, it makes no sense to implement the rule. It's in general a situation that we need to see a ramp up in resource in way things are being policed on the financial side and on the technical side. This is something which we need to address. And therefore, I think that the idea of pushing it 1 year out looks logic and strategically well thought through, but didn't gain the traction and didn't trigger enough appetite with the ones that decide.
Andreas?
Yeah, not a lot more to add, really. I think our position is clear. We like what is on the table now, what we have seen last week also. In terms of what's coming in on the technical side, sporting side, and on the financial side. And just waiting now for the 31st of October to see the publication of these regulations, and then we all know what we have to work to from 21 onwards.
Okay, thank you. Next question, please.
Craig Slater, Sky Sports News. A question for Toto. We read some very powerful words today about your understanding of the racism Lewis suffered as a young boy. You also talked about he's not perhaps appreciated as he should be or has the honours that he perhaps deserves. We see all the furore about making some comments about the environment recently. Do you have any lingering worry as his boss that there is perhaps an unconscious racial bias against him still?
I don't want to step too much into personal experiences and think that he made aware to me, because this is a discussion we had in private, but look at our room here, it's not very diverse. I think for us it is very difficult to understand that if you're one of the very few that you are faced with these kind of situations. And I can just tell you from my personal perspective, racism is not something which is out there and in a more educated environment and very much into the face. It's more the subtle side that is very, very painful and hurts. And this is why we sometimes need to put ourselves into a different perspective. I have very much learned to do that because of him and his perspective. And I've never seen things in that way before. He has explained them to me, and I realized them. In terms of things that have been said around environment, I think it's very important that each of us tries, and this is my personal opinion, he tries to the best of his abilities to be conscious about things and help in reduce emissions and add our personal bit to the whole story. And I've seen Lewis doing that. I've seen him changing in his behaviors, be it of reducing his own flying, and he has done that. And I think we need to acknowledge that and respect that rather than criticize. It's the power of the, how can I say, the almost like the economies of scale. If everybody changes, we will have 9 billion people changing. And I think it needs to start. You need to start with yourself, and he has done that. And I think that is right.
Thank you. Next one.
Scott Mitchell from Autosport. To all four, please. Just to pick up on the comments about the 2021 rules and what you could have done in terms of the cost cap. To be clear, do you think there's any scope to delay the wider introduction of new rules for 2021? Would you support that? And what shape are the 2021 rules in general after last week's meeting?
Otmar, let's start with you.
Well, it was discussed at last week's meeting. So we had a bit of a discussion and debate on delaying the rules by a year, just for the reasons Christian mentioned. I think it's just a bit more equitable between the big teams that can afford to spend more now if we delayed it by a year. But I think there's a small chance of that happening. And as far as the regulations go, we'll know in a week's time. They're a bit more restrictive than what we have today, but it's financial, it's technical, it's sporting, so it's three different publications that we'll get.
Thank you. Christian?
Yeah, I think as Otmar says, there's three elements that are going to be passed through at the end of the month. The sporting side is arguably the easiest. I think the technical regulations, you know, they are immature, and there's still a large amount of questions being raised. And so I think what does get published, there will be inevitable TDs and refinements before we actually get to the 2021 season. And likewise with the financial regulations, you know, there's never been a police budget cap in Formula One previously, and obviously having the tools and the infrastructure to police all the different corporate entities that exist and subsidiaries, etc., within Formula One is no small undertaking. It's a very complex business, and everybody's structure is different. So there's a lot of ground to cover, even though I think regulations will come out on the 31st. I think there will still be financial directives, technical directives that see adjustments happen before we actually get to the 2021 year.
Yeah, maybe only one point to add, because that's pretty much my view too, is that I don't think these regulations are going to be stopped. It's been made very clear that this is moving forward. There will be tweaks and changes in detail and interpretations, but broadly, I think this is moving forward.
Anything to add, Andrew?
Nothing to add, really.
Okay. Next one, please.
Christoph Becker, Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, to all four, please. Coming into the year, it looked like this was going to be Brexit season. Now it's most likely not. It's going to be in the future, probably. Could you elaborate a little bit on how much this issue has affected your teams this year and how much it will continue to affect you, since the political situation seems to be a little bit unclear still? Thanks.
Andreas, let's start with you this time.
Yeah, well, I obviously follow it also, what's going on there in detail.
They're going to kick him out first.
In the newspaper, but I got the guarantee I can stay at least, whatever happens. I think as a team, we simply did our homework and prepared to every possible scenario which is on the horizon. And I'm sure whatever happens in the next weeks or month, there will be solutions in place, and we will keep going racing.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think you need to prepare as any other company out there for a potential impact. It's clear that it will harm us in a way, because our businesses live with the just-in-time concept of product supplies, but we are going to get our head around it. And as a team, I think we have put a lot of effort into understanding what the potential impact could be, and we are ready for whatsoever outcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, likewise, we've done our research as far as you can do as to what is the potential impacts of a Brexit, if there is a deal, if there's no deal, if there's extensions. And I think, you know, it's been a bit of a distraction this year in certain respects. I think people are just, you know, as a whole, fed up with it. They just want it done one way or another. And whatever it is, we'll deal with and get on with it. But it's a little bit of a comedy show, British politics at the moment, in the way that, the whole issue has been handled, with, you know, obviously different agendas being covered. But, whatever it is, we'll deal with it. And I think, you know, we've done our due diligence whichever way it goes.
Thank you.
Well, we've been planning for the worst case, so worst case being a no-deal Brexit. So I think we've put some plans in place to cope with that, and we're hoping for the best case. So, but only time will tell. But I think we're well prepared to keep going if Brexit does happen sooner rather than later, and there is no deal.
Thank you. Right, next one.
Bart van Dooyeweert, nu.nl. For Christian, Max Verstappen is driving his 99th GP of his career this weekend, making it 100 in the US. He's obviously not a rookie anymore. You've been very positive about his results last 18 months. On the other hand, in this sport, nobody's perfect. There's always room to improve. So what can he still do better, do you think?
Well, I think you're always learning in any sport, and I think that you know, it's incredible to think that Max has only just turned 22 years of age, and he's about to celebrate his 100th Grand Prix. Is a remarkable record already. I think he's doing a great job. You can see that that experience of that, you know, those 99 races is really serving him well. I think he'd probably only done about 25 races in cars before he arrived in Formula One. So all his learning has been very much under the scrutiny of the media, and I think, you know, he's dealt with that incredibly well, and he's extremely well-rounded now, and is almost a veteran.
Thank you. Next one.
Fernando Alonso for Motorlab.com. Toto, there's a subject about the upgrades on your engine. That there are a lot of worries precisely in the side of Racing Point, and the problems that the car with Checo have in several races. Do you think these problems are more about the hard to develop this season, or is because the development is taking all the high as possible, or is more about the configuration on the other team?
I think you have no differences between the configurations. As per the rules, you need to have the same hard and software on every car. And our philosophy has always been that the learning that is happening across a multitude of cars is very important to improve in performance. On the Racing Point cars, we've been unlucky this year, and in the same way we've been unlucky with Robert, I think it was Spa, and these have been incidents that are not down to pushing performance, but more things that we haven't seen before on the dynos. So things still break. This is a mechanical sport, and with all the best simulations in the world, you still sometimes find out whilst running them in anger that things break, and this is what happened to us, and this is something we need to get under control also for the future races. Certainly something that we need to be on our toes for the last few races in order to give equal material to our two drivers, and next year we just need to get better in terms of reliability as well.
Thank you. Next question.
Rebecca Clancy, The Times, to Toto. Lewis traditionally turns up in the second half of the season, but this year he's won just the one race since the summer break, and obviously Ferrari have come back as well. Lewis spoke the other day about how he's had quite a lot going on in his life, and I just wondered if you'd noticed anything different with him this season, or is it perhaps just the fact that it's very draining going for a sixth title?
There is a reason why this is a record. I think it's very difficult to keep yourself in the right spot, motivated, energized, passionate about things, and we certainly are, but it's not trivial. And I don't think this has really played a role in his second part of the season. I think that Valtteri has upped his game, which is good for the team, it's good for Lewis, and good to see. The Ferrari has become very strong and has resurged after the summer break and has become the benchmark. And the result is that we've not been able to score the results that we had in the first half of the season. So I wouldn't put it down to him as a driver. I think he's still in a very good place. It's more that he didn't have the car underneath that was able to give him these kind of results.
Thank you. Any more?
John McAvoy, Daily Mail. Toto, I was wondering when you get the new regulations signed and sealed, will you then sit down with Lewis to discuss a new deal? And how strongly do you believe you'll be able to keep him away from Ferrari?
I think that this Ferrari thing has been maybe blown out of proportion. Lewis has a clear opinion where he sees himself in the future, and we are and have always been very loyal to our drivers. This is taking its ordinary course of business. 2021, everything is different, and the drivers, in the same way as the teams, will be looking at opportunities and their future, evaluate options that are on the table, benchmark the team's performance, and at the end of the day, the car's performance is what counts the most for the top guys. And these discussions have slowly but surely started, but I don't see this coming to any closure in terms of 2021 lineup anytime soon. That will be going into the next season, is my opinion.
Thank you. That's all we've got time for. Thank you, gentlemen, for your time. And a full transcript of this press conference will be available shortly at fia.com.